Ladies and gentlemen, I'm here backstage at the Sunshine Theater in Albuquerque, New Mexico on March 13th, 2013 for Yonder Mountain String Band. And say hi.
Hi, all I'm right. Jeff Austin. Hello.
We're going to be having a little chat or something.
Lively conversation, spry conversation.
Thanks for taking the time.
Of course.
Welcome back to New Mexico.
It's nice to be here.
It's been a while.
It has been a long ass time.
What you been up to since then?
Life, surviving the road in Yonder Mountain String Band, and
are you on the road pretty much all the time?
No, not really. Our touring we shifted it a little bit this year, but it's usually pretty regular. It's a regular thing. We usually do a month long trip at the beginning of the year. We take a month off. We do another month. We do scattered stuff throughout the summer, and and then fall tour, and then that's pretty much our year. So.
Nice.
But no, it's been good. You know, it's just been a lot of, you know, life moves on.
You're working on a new record?
We're trying to. I'm not quite sure where it's heading or what's going on with it. You know, we've never been a recorded band. We've always been a live.
I was going to ask you how you feel about the difference between a recording, you know, like the show or the one you did with Beck versus the live show. Is it?
With Tom Rothrock, who the guy
was Tom
Beck?
Rothrock. Yeah.
No, we didn't work with Beck. That would be fun. As opposed to a live show, I prefer the live show.
Yeah,
I prefer it's just a more immediate transfer of energy towards people. You know, I do it. It's
a transfer of energy.
Yeah, it's not that I don't enjoy the. Yeah,
it's like a biofeedback.
Yeah, we get up there and we put it out, and they give it back to us, and it feeds the cycle. Yeah. It's not that I don't enjoy the process of recording. I just the logistics that come along with it, since we're an independent label and we fund everything. When you know this is not a music purchasing environment in which we travel, in which we exist in, that it is a music seeing and a music sharing, you know, to pump $150,000, $200,000 into a record and sell 10,000 copies is just put your head in the door.
And that's different now than maybe it was when you first were starting.
Put your head in the door and slam it over and over. You know, it makes no sense. You could use that money towards other things, improving production, improving travel, improving
buying better lights,
whatever, all that shit.
Yeah. So, okay. So, how long have you been at it as a live entity, as the Yonder Mountain?
15 years almost. This year will be 15.
Starting
years.
Out in Nederland, Colorado, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
Now, it seems to me that more so than just about anywhere else west of the Mississippi, folk music and bluegrass and that sort of rootsy music has ground there.
Yeah, it does. There's, and I've said it before, and fuck, I'll say it until the day I'm done, is that it has two key things going for it. It is a demographic from young to old, whatever you consider young or whatever you consider old. It has a demographic of people that want to go see live bands, and they don't just want to go see one kind of live band. They'll go see an open mic thing on Tuesday night, and that weekend they'll go see Pretty Lights play in an arena.
Are you talking about Denver, or are you talking about Colorado in general?
Talking about Colorado in general. But talking about the Front Range area.
But probably not Ned, though.
Yeah.
How big is Ned?
1,200 people.
And they have a choice between which band they want to
see? They got internet, man. You know how big Ned is. They got internet. You can find out how big Ned is. They have a choice. But also what it has going for it is it has going venues of different sizes and different abilities. If you're a band starting out and you want to grow, you can play the Mountain Sun on a Sunday for free and put 100 people in there. Then you can jump and you can move up and do an opening gig at like the Fox Theater, which is a 650 room, right? Then you do a headlining show there, and then you can move from there, which is 650, to Boulder Theater, which is 1,000. And then from there, you can move down into Denver to the Ogden, which is 1,600. And from there, you can play your options of doing the Paramount, which is over 2,000. Mm-hmm. You can jump up to the Fillmore, which is 3,500. And then from there, you can start moving. Now they have the First Bank Center, which is 7,000. Then you can jump to Red Rocks, which is 10,000. You know, it has a ladder of venues that allow a band to grow and be encouraged by its growth. You know, there's nothing worse than, you guys sold 200 tickets in this town. Let's put you in a 1,000-seat room, and you'll do 350 tickets, which is more than you did last time, but the room looks fucking empty.
Yeah.
What the Boulder and the Front Range area has these venues that allow you to grow. gradually move up and gradually expand your audience while being encouraging to the band from a visual point of view of, well, we put 500 people in the Fox Theater and it looked fucking rocking and people stayed all the way till the end, you know?
Yeah.
Not, we put 500 people in the Paramount, which is 2,200 or whatever it is, and it looked fucking empty.
You know, seem to have a pretty good grasp of the numbers.
Have I mentioned to you I've been at this 15 years?
Were you the booker for the band at one point?
I did.
In the early days?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
I did.
And have you been independent all that time? You've never had a label put out a release?
We had a label put out a release. We were with Vanguard Records, who connected us with Tom Rothrock, who we did the self-titled record with, which is coming out in vinyl on Record Store Day.
Nice.
Which I'm really excited about. The one thing that came from that is that we had record label money that backed us. The unfortunate part that happened was that there was a release that came out right before ours that garnered a hit. A hit top 10 Billboard kind of a thing. So our release got a little squashed, and just it's the bit we got to understand the business side of it where and we were released from our deal. We didn't owe them two or three more records.
So you mentioned that you see the business kind of going towards a more digital model, let's say.
It's been doing that for a decade.
Yeah, anybody would be crazy not to notice it. How else have you seen the scene change, especially since your live touring act? Is that still a robust kind of thing to be doing? Or
a few years ago when the economy was taking the big hit, there were a lot of bands that were dropping 20, 30, 40, 50% in markets. You know, there were bands that were severely affected by that. And they're still recovering, and they'll work X amount of years to recover from that. I'm not giving, there's no specifics, but you would have a band that would go sell 2,000 tickets in a city. They would come back and sell 1,000 tickets. Mm-hmm. Well, now what they need to do is reimagine their whole thing. We were very lucky that we had very few markets that happened to us in. We had very few markets where we really felt the hit. Mm-hmm. We were growing still. Mm-hmm. We would go into a venue and go, oh my God, it's sold out. Whereas there was a band that came and used to sell out two nights, and they were here last week and they had half a house.
Somehow in the new economy that's being born, touring is a viable thing.
I think what happened with us is that we always worked so hard to nurture that live audience. And people saw that so that when the economy shit the bed, whatever that was, 3-4 years ago, they still stayed loyal to us and they still came out. They still went to the effort to say, it's a Wednesday night, but screw it, I'm still going to go see Yonder Plum Music. And I think that just comes from being loyal to your audience,
How do you feel about Denver and Colorado being kind of the epicenter of whatever the nouveau folky string kind of movement is these days? Or do you think that's just a bunch of press BS?
I don't know. It's the press always wants to cling on to something, They always want to identify a place and a group and a time. It's really important because that's what sets up a story, right? Mm-hmm. It's not fun reading a story if you don't. It's not fun reading The Great Gatsby if you don't have a sense of when it is. That's part of the story that pulls you along. So part of the story that pulls us along, but it is true in this case, is that, and it goes back to what I just said. When we were first starting there, that was when String Cheese was blowing up. That was when Leftover Salmon was established in the area. We formed a band without drums to be the different thing. We formed that to be the different band. We're the bluegrass band.
Was there a Telluride
who
bluegrass
might stretch
festival
it.
Tie into?
There might be. Well, let me finish. There might be. I lost my train of thought. No, you're good. You're good. Where we decided to be the bluegrass band that would stretch things out and not have drums. Mm-hmm. And it goes back to what I said with the audience.
But you're not necessarily going more traditionalist.
It goes to what I was saying with the audience being there and interested in hearing different music, Mm-hmm. And they've always been that way. We've got people that saw us play in bars to 10 people, and they come see us now at Red Rocks. So, what did you say? Sorry. What was the last thing you said? I can't remember.
Okay. Bluegrass Festival.
The Telluride Bluegrass Festival.
Yeah. Well,
I was thinking, does that also feed into the whole Colorado string band mythos?
It does, because I think it does, Bill, because look at the title of it. It's a Telluride Bluegrass Festival, and it is the least bluegrass festival that you'll find. When I look at the roster and I see like a real traditional bluegrass band, I'm so stoked.
Right.
Because it's going to be the bluegrass part of the bluegrass.
So do the traditionalists like get, you know, all pissed off because...
I pay very little attention to traditionalists or purists or this or that or whatever. We ate ourselves alive for years listening to all that noise. And you know what? You can only be who you are and do what you do. And if it makes people happy, awesome. And if it doesn't, then so be it. At least you were true to yourself.
Does it make you happy?
Does what I do make me happy? Yeah, it makes me happy. I love playing music. You know, be it in this band or going out and doing solo stuff. You know, this year I'm doing a lot more solo work than I have in a long time.
Okay.
And it excites me. It excites me because I... Well,
you're going out on tour?
And let me tell you. Okay. Jeez, some coffee tonight?
Oh, I'm excited.
I know, I can tell. Playing in this band, it's what it is, you know, and it changes every day, you know, we discover new things, we try new things, and then when I get to go out and do other shit, it allows me to put together a lineup with drums if I want. It allows me to have an electric guitar player and a killer bassist and a drummer, and we get to play material that I've written years ago or recently that I don't play with Yonder, just because it doesn't fit with Yonder, it doesn't, mm-hmm. You know, I stopped a long time ago writing music specifically for this band. Because I'd put myself in a corner and suddenly I'd have writer's block. Mm-hmm. Because I was like, I gotta write a jam song in A for Yonder Mountain. And then I finally went, well, shit.
Brilliant.
Well, no, it's fucking a terrible. I was like, oh my God, it's a terrible idea. Because I'd back myself into this corner and I would, I would miss out on a lot of ideas that I had had.
But
so,
you've got carte blanche to just explore any avenue.
Nobody's
got
carte blanche.
You guys did Frank Zappa the last time.
Nobody's got carte blanche except Bruce Springsteen and Willie Nelson. That's who's got carte blanche.
All right.
Start carte blanching me. I don't see a jet waiting for me to take me home tonight.